edition this afternoon.
Buju, welcome to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. I'm your host, Co Primo. Today, we're revisiting our chat with Jackson Ripley, a member of the Mandan, Hidatsa, and Arikara Nation. He shares his inspiring story behind Miigwetch's Brew, a cozy gourmet coffee kiosk he opened with his wife. Operating from an 8x10 building, Miigwetch's Brew is more than just a coffee spot. It's a community hub. Jackson talks about the surprising story about why they purchased and how they purchased the coffee kiosk in Cloquet, and a lot more. He spoke with us in October of 2024. Enjoy.
So we're sitting on the couch one night, and she's scrolling through Facebook Marketplace, and she's like, look at this. Look at this coffee shop. And it was a great color. It was blue. It had the orange windows, and blue's her favorite color. She's like, you want to open a coffee shop? I'm like, yeah, I don't care, whatever. Yeah, we got some extra money, you know. I'll just agree, because it was late at night, and I was ready to go to bed or whatever.
Buju, hello. Welcome to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. I'm your host, Leah Lem.
And I'm your other host, Cole Primo. Miigwetch for joining us today. Native Lights is a podcast and radio show, but it's more than just that. It's a place for Native folks to tell their stories. Each and every week, we have captivating conversations with great guests from a whole lot of different backgrounds. I mean, we're talking musicians, community leaders, healthcare advocates, coffee shop owners, the works, and they have a wonderful mix of passions. We talk to them about their gifts and how they share their gifts with the community, centering around finding purpose in our lives and continuing to amplify Native voices. What's up, Leah? How you doing?
I'm doing great. Enjoying my soda here. Really amped up for a good conversation. How about you?
What kind of soda or pop? It should be pop, right?
You know, it's funny. Medium funny, I guess. But I think when I moved to Boston, I got made fun of a bit for a few words that I'd use.
That's right.
And it just became habit to say soda. And not soda either.
Soda.
Soda.
Well, I'm enjoying my sparkling water, regular, unflavored.
Just sinister.
No, but I'm doing well. I'm actually kind of sore right now. It's the first season in the house where I had to do a bunch of leaves pickup. I raked a whole lot of leaves, put them into like 24 big old bags. That pretty much took up my whole Saturday. So that was fun.
How are the allergies with that?
That was the next thing that happened. It was just sneezing. And I got this red marks just all throughout my forehead and cheeks. I don't know. That's a new one for me, because all of it is flying at me when I'm pushing the bag down, trying to get it more compact and stuff so I can keep going with the one bag. Anyways, it's been a thing, but you know, it's fun. And then obviously it's even more fun when the next day comes around and there's just a whole layer of leaves again. So
yeah,
I'm just going to mulch those. Yep. I don't even care. Whatever.
Yeah. Live out in the country. Come on.
Yeah, Dad was saying, I just blow them into the woods. And I'm like, we ain't got nobody's woods.
Dan just mows them over.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, at our house, I have to close all the doors, close all the windows, because if dry leaves and grass and all that get in the house, then it's over for me. I get pretty bad allergies too.
But one thing that was needed before raking all the leaves, I needed a big old cup of coffee. Mm-hmm. I need a big old cup of coffee.
Okay, so tell me, Cole. You and I are both coffee lovers.
Yep.
I remember when we were kids, we swore that we'd never drink coffee because we thought it was gross.
Yeah, I remember being super annoyed at you because you were obviously, you know, slightly older than me. And so you got into coffee earlier than I did, and I was betrayed. But then, of course, I got into it. So it's funny.
Do you have a cutoff during the day when you have to stop drinking coffee?
Yeah, I think unless it's a ridiculously busy day or something like that, I try to stop by late morning, early afternoon. And usually 2 cups of straight black coffee are all I can handle before I start getting real shaky. So 2 cups. Before 1 o'clock, probably, is my limit. How about you?
Okay, so you're lightweight. Gotcha. Yeah. Okay.
Well, it's just because I drink strong coffee. Come on, it's different. It's different.
Let's just say I drink more than that. take care of yourself, everybody. Take care of yourself.
Exactly.
Well, I'm really excited about our conversation today because it has to do with the topic on hand, coffee. Jackson Ripley is joining us. Jackson is enrolled with Mandan, Hidatsa, and Arikara Nation and is from the Fort Berthold Reservation. He's lived on the Fond du Lac Reservation for 22 years now. He's married to somebody I think we've both interviewed. I don't think she's been on Native Lights yet, so I'm actually really surprised. Liz Jackla, you might have heard of her. She's a great musician and voice, but Jackson and Liz both run Miigwetch's Brew, and that's currently the only Native and woman-owned gourmet coffee kiosk business in their area there on Fond du Lac. So it's really exciting. I've watched a lot of their social media videos, and it looks like a really cool spot to visit. I haven't been yet, and I really plan to. I promise when I get out there next, that'll be a place I visit. So Jackson Ripley is here with us today. Bonjour, Jackson.
Nice. Bonjour.
Bonjour.
Hello. Bonjour.
All right. Bonjour, Jackson. Could you please start out by introducing yourself? You know, letting us know who you are and where you're joining us from.
Bonjour. Shtede Wachtute Indijnakaz, B'nai Shein Dodem. I am Jackson Ripley. I'm actually living here on the Fond du Lac Reservation. But I grew up out in North Dakota on the Fort Berthold Reservation, part of the MHA Nation. And I'm a Rikara.
Awesome. Awesome. How are you doing and how's the family doing?
I'm doing good. The family is busy. For those that don't know, my wife is Elizabeth Jackla. And anybody who knows her, she's go, go, go. I mean, even tonight, she was here for a little bit. And then there's a meeting I got to go to. See ya. I was like, oh, okay. And my son's the same way. He's following right in her footsteps. And now that he's officially a driver, he's gone quite a bit now with his car, quote unquote. And my daughter, she's a tween, so she's in her bedroom. She's a little under the weather right now, so that's probably a good thing.
Jackson, is there anything that's on your mind these days that you're thinking about kicking around that, I don't know, that's coming to mind?
There's a series on Prime Video, Vox Machina. It's a cartoon, but it's adult cartoon, you know. The whole premise is like Dungeons and Dragons. This is the third season. I'm the only nerd that like wants to sit down and watch it. Even my daughter comes in, she's like, what do you watch, in anime? I was like, no, it's not anime. It's So whenever anybody else comes in the room, I'm like, okay, I'm done. I'll watch this tomorrow when I got some alone time. But that's like my new thing to watch.
You're listening to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. Native Lights is produced by Minnesota Native News and Ampers with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Today, we're revisiting our chat with Jackson Ripley, a member of the Mandan, Hidatsa, and Arikara Nation. He shares with us the inspiring story behind Miigwetch's Brew in Cloquet, Minnesota.
Well, Jackson, tell us about Miigwetch's Brew. Give us an overview.
Miigwetch's Brew is what I call a gourmet coffee kiosk located on the Fond du Lac Reservation. It is a one of a kind, for sure. And just a drive-through, you know, like I said, it's a kiosk. So it's a 8x10 building. And I am dishing out some serious, serious maple lattes. So Liz and I bought this little building during COVID because it was on Facebook Marketplace under the assumption that we'd try to get it up and running during COVID because people still need coffee. You can just hand the coffee out. You don't have to like interact. You don't have to do a whole lot. But there was so many more things that had to happen in order for it to really get up and running. It took us 4 years. So we ended up opening in June. And so we're coming up on 5 months in November on the 7th. I would say that where we're at right now is way beyond my expectations of where I thought this business would be. My idea was that we would serve the community right here on Fond du Lac. We're just a mile down from the tribal center. We're 2 miles down for Manoyawin, the clinic. And then we have people driving out to Big Lake, I guess, a resort. And, you know, there's the Big Lake that people stay at. So I figured that would be it, you know, and whatever traffic we got, it would be good, you know, and we just like serve coffee. But we had that interview with NPR right after we opened. Like we were probably not even a week into it, 2 weeks. And it just blew up. Like NPR put it out there and it must have went across Indian Country Today and everywhere else. And all of a sudden I'm getting all these people coming off the interstate, heading up 35. Maybe they're heading towards Duluth. They're heading up the shore. They're going to Two Harbors, up to Grand Marais. They're jumping off 35 to come to this little kiosk on the res, out of their way to grab a cup of coffee. It still blows me away. Like, I still have people coming by this weekend, this last weekend, that, you know, we heard about your place on the radio. We want to come this weekend. We're making it up. We're going to go look at the leaves, and we had to just come here. And not to toot my own horn, but I'm going to. So, because nobody else is going to. But we're the only 5-star, according to Google, rated coffee shop between Cloquet and Duluth. I think there might be, I should take that back. Maybe there's one other coffee shop that has 5 stars. But outside of that, it's been beyond my expectations of what I thought this coffee shop would be.
So do you mean to tell me buying that on Marketplace, the kiosk, was that an impulse purchase?
It totally was. It totally was. Liz and I were sitting on this because, you know, everybody's home. So we're sitting on the couch one night and she's scrolling through Facebook Marketplace and she's like, look at this. Look at this coffee shop. And it was a great color. It was blue. It had the orange windows colored. I mean, blue's her favorite color. So she's like, you want to open a coffee shop? I'm like, yeah, I don't care. Whatever. Yeah, we got some extra money, you know, because, you know, we had some extra money during COVID. And so we had saved it. And I said, yeah, all right, fine. You know, we'll see what happens. And me nonchalantly thinking like, I'll just agree because it was late at night and I was ready to go to bed or whatever, you know, I was just like, yeah, okay, whatever. She bought it. And well, we went down and looked at it first, of course. And after we looked at it, I was like, oh, it comes with everything. So we couldn't pass it up, I guess, you know, but at the same time, I was like, I don't know, you know. And sat outside of our house, well, for almost 4 years. So it had been 23, started getting some trees cleared. We start having a vision of what we were going to do or what needed to happen because, of course, Liz was, she's kind of an impulse person. So she was like, ah, let's just hook up a generator and we'll figure out some water for it and we'll turn it on and the people will come. I was like, hold on, wait. If we do that, what if we get more than one person? We only got this little tiny driveway and they're going to get jammed up and somebody's, you know, it's going to be a mess and nobody's going to want to come. Let's do something else. Let's try to find a way we can make a driveway. We can clear out some areas. And after a year of clearing trees, and then building another roadway, which is now the drive-up area, we got it done. It was a slow process, though, because, of course, like we were trying not to take out a bunch of loans, you know, because we talked about it. But man, you know, like selling coffee, you're not going to get rich overnight, you know, at $6 a cup. It's not going to happen. And you have to sell a lot of coffee in order to start making any headway. It's been a long process. But like I said, overall, though, I mean, it's been amazing. So impulse, I guess, you know, works, if that's what you're wondering.
So were both of you like super into coffee?
Yeah, we both love coffee. And somewhere along the way, I was going to coffee shops, of course, before COVID and enjoying just having a really good cup of coffee. It started with buying those, have you heard of a mocha pot? They're kind of like an hourglass looking thing and they kind of work on a percolate system. Put them on your stove and then it comes out with a really strong coffee, almost like espresso type coffee. So I bought one and I was like, oh, well, we need a bigger one because this isn't enough for two of us. So that's kind of where it started, was there. And then when we bought the coffee shop, I said, oh, well, we should probably get like a home espresso machine, like a good one. We bought one. It's called a Breville espresso machine. And then I start just kind of experimenting. YouTube is the best thing for anything. I learned everything I know about how to make coffee and what to do and how long and the grind and, you know, your water to coffee ratios, all those kind of things. You can learn everything on YouTube about coffee. There are so many really smart people out there that that's all they do is talk about coffee, drink coffee. Unfortunately, I don't know if that's a good thing to say or not. Like that's how I learned to make coffee. That's how I learned what I'm doing.
So there's a lot of experimenting and trying recipes and all that good stuff, getting really caffeinated while doing so.
Yeah. Fortunately, right now I'm kind of coming down. Like every morning I have to have an espresso because I got to like test the product. You know, I got to make sure that my water to espresso ratio is good. It's coming out good. It looks good. Usually when people come by in the morning, I'm always like, hey, what's going on? Yeah, what's good? You know, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, rah, 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 rah. And that's pretty much, I'm sure, how I sound when I'm talking to everybody because I'm so like wired up. When we first opened, my wife has a friend that came through and she's kind of a quiet lady and a little reserved, you know, just normal native woman. And here's me like, hey, what's going on? What are you doing? What do you got going on today? Oh, yeah, well, you know, we should do this. And I got this going on. You know, I was just like talking her ear off, left, and I didn't think anything of it. But apparently she talked to Liz later on. She said, your husband is something else. She's like, she mentioned something like, man, is he always like that? So talking to him. And I was like, what did I say? I asked her. But I'm sure, you know, it came across as like just over the top. And I have so much fun out there. Every day, I just like, it's fun. I get to hear all the good stuff about what's going on the res. I get to hear about people's victories, maybe their not so good days or whatever. You know, I mean, when I first started, like after not doing well in college, I came back to the casino. Casinos had just started. And I thought, oh, I'll work at the bar because the bar is always a cool place to work. That's where all the cool stuff happens. Not really, but that's in my brain, you know, my 20 some year old brain. And I was good at that because I did the same thing I'm doing now. I talked to people, listened to them, listened to what they got going on, you know, serve them their drinks. And although they don't hang around anymore, you know, they just drive down. But yeah, it's that same kind of concept, you know. I feel like I'm just kind of implementing that, what I learned. And then, of course, I went into marketing later and doing the same things I do now, using both of those skills.
That makes sense. I can see how that can translate over for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about what do you guys serve? What are some of the special drinks you guys have?
I serve maple lattes. Maple lattes are really our signature drink because it's straight maple syrup. I get that from Spirit Lakes Native Farms out here in Sawyer. And so it's local. I also get my beans from a roaster just up the shore called Dream Cloud Roasters, coffee roasters. And I met them a couple of years before we got this up and running. I was asking them questions about how stuff worked and what I need to do and so on and so forth. So I was picking their brains. And during that time, I was like, man, this coffee's so good. You think you could roast for me? And said, yeah. So I think part of it is the syrup. Plus I get my espresso beans fresh every week. I don't buy like a big bulk. So I'm buying just every week as I go and as I need. I know that makes a big difference. You know, we serve, I guess, every, you know, from caramel lattes, vanilla lattes, mochas, white chocolate mochas, and then just breves. Breve is just espresso in half and half. And then a lot of ice drinks. That's one of the things I wasn't expecting and I wasn't really prepared for when we started. I mean, I know I drank iced coffee before, but so many iced coffees I serve throughout the day, no matter the temperature. If it's cold out in the morning, they're still ordering iced coffees. And I think the point is, from what I've heard, you could drink it faster, so you get your kick right away.
See, I'm kind of the opposite. I like mine hotter than hot, even if it's like 100 degrees outside. Like, it's got to be hot.
And I'm kind of the same way. I drink the maple lattes. I always have them hot. I can't do the cold.
You're listening to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. Native Lights is produced by Minnesota Native News and Ampers with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Today, we're revisiting our chat with Jackson Ripley, a member of the Mandan, Hidatsa, and Arikara Nation. He shares with us the inspiring story behind Miigwetch's Brew in Cloquet, Minnesota.
All right, well, let's get into the name.
Oh, well, I can't take credit for that. Miigwetch's Brew came from Liz. And of course, Miigwetch in Ojibwe is thank you, but it was just a nice play on words. And we spell it like witches. And so it's Miigwetch's. And the brew just kind of seemed to go with it.
That's fantastic. So your family also pitches in and works at the kiosk.
Xander and Jagger jumped in during the summer. And we didn't know what to expect with the powwow. The first powwow that came through. Veterans powwow. Oh my gosh. We had car after car, like the entire time we were working, it was like straight, like cars the whole time. It was so busy. I was impressed with both of them for the fact that they managed to, you know, at that age, like this is their first job, you know? And I remember having my first job working at a little fast food restaurant. And I remember like buses coming through or something. And I just could not like think. There was so much going on and trying to remember everybody's order and who had what. And so they did a really good job considering that they had never experienced anything like that, you know? Yeah. They get in there, they help out. My daughter loved it the first couple of days she worked because I think we had one other girl help us out, the friend of Xander's, Lily. And I think both of them made like $100 some in tips. So that was a nice incentive to say, oh, I like working. Working is fun.
So could you talk about like just more on the community response? There's not many coffee shops in the area, right?
No. Well, I'm not sure as far as like native-owned coffee businesses. I know there's some down in the cities, right? But those are coffee shops. I don't think there's any coffee kiosks anywhere, any of the residents. Not that I know of anyway, but so no, there really isn't. You know, the community was so supportive. The first day we opened, Liz, she's got all kinds of people that she's friends with on Facebook. So when she told them that we were opening the coffee shop this week and or it was the next day or whatever, we had so many people just come through. I think every cop came through to help out. The chairman came by, I remember the second day, bought a coffee and gave us $100 and said, just buy who's ever coming up next. So $100 goes a long ways, right? So I think by 11 o'clock, we were almost used up the $100. And then somebody else came by and said, oh, my coffee's paid for. Here's $50, you know, paid for the next people. And then somebody else came up and they gave another $25 or $50 or something. Anyway, that whole day, nobody paid for their own coffee. And so that in itself kind of like shows how much the community really like jumped in and was wanting to support not only our business, but just show support for everybody else, which has made me feel so good. Like I put an Instagram post about it. I just didn't know what to say. It was like, just thinking about it kind of gets me all choked, you know, like teary eyed or whatever, you know, because it was so cool. It was amazing.
Yeah. And I noticed that you're pretty active on the interwebs. Were you always active or is this something where you needed to get into it because, you know, you wanted that presence online?
There's a lady up the shore at the Java Moose and she does a daily post, but she mostly talks about the weather up in Grand Marais. You know, lets everybody know what's going to happen in Grand Marais that day or talks about some of the community events. Sounds like she's really involved with what's going on. So kind of took her lead there and said, oh, maybe, you know, I should do something like that. And it was kind of more of a spur of the moment, like, okay, well, this is what I got going on today in case anybody's watching, you know, come by. Or I was kind of giving everybody a status. Oh, we made it 1 week. We made it 4 weeks. We made it a month. You know, we made it 2 months. And while I was doing that, I kept making daily videos. And the more I did it, the more I found people that people are actually following me and watching. And so it's kind of just kind of taken off. And I figure I got to keep doing it because I've had so many people tell me that, like, oh, I enjoy your videos every morning. I love listening to you, what you got going on. And I try to be as genuine as possible. I don't try to put on whatever. And I think that's really helped.
Well, and that's a nice part about having a social media presence is people will know to look for updates. So it sounds like, but I'm not going to assume, being out there on social media, chatting with folks as they come drive through, does this fit your personality pretty well?
Just a little bit. Yeah, I'm definitely an extrovert. It's funny because Liz, even though like she's an amazing singer, she does all these performances, she stands in front of classrooms, she performs in front of all these schools with hundreds or however many kids, you know, and gives these talks all the time. If she didn't have to do that, she wouldn't, you know, like she just could very well just be at home and do things behind the scenes and she'd be okay with that. So definitely opposites attract kind of thing. Doing what I'm doing right here is like, that's, dare I say that that's the attraction for me, which is Brew. And I just know that like, I really do love people and I love listening to their, whatever they got going on, where they're coming from, where they've been, and then giving them coffee and hopefully they enjoy their coffee, which so far Google says that they have. But I think that's the biggest part is putting something more besides, you know, yes, the coffee's really good, but so is the company, you know, the conversations that end up happening. I feel like I get to know people a lot better that way. And now there's quite a few people that they just pull up and I don't even ask them anymore what they want to drink because I already know. So that's where that bartender thing kind of falls in too, you know. I know people more by their drinks, what they order, than I still maybe don't know some people's names yet, but... I always appreciate any people that just order a straight latte, you know, just espresso and steamed milk, or same with a cappuccino, just straight cappuccino, no flavoring, no frills, just that. There's a drink called a cortado, 2 ounces of espresso, 2 ounces of steamed milk. So it's, you know, very compact and, you know, like those are my favorite drinks right there. But yeah, when somebody orders one of those, I'm like, oh, okay, this person really enjoys coffee, you know?
That's awesome. I feel energized just talking to him.
Don't even need coffee. Just ready to go.
Then again, tomorrow morning, I'm going to get right back at it, you know.
That's right.
It just seems like he enjoys what he's doing and enjoys serving the community.
Well, yeah, and like building community through coffee and conversation.
Love it. Love it. So miigwech to our guest, Jackson Ripley. He lives on the Fond du Lac Reservation with his spouse and co-founder of the coffee kiosk, Miigwech's Brew. He's from the Mandan, Hidatsa, and Arikara Nation. I'm Cole Primo.
And I'm Leah Lem. Miigwech for listening.
Gigawabamin.
You're listening to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. Native Lights is produced by Minnesota Native News and Ampers with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.
We just heard Native Lights Radio, where Indigenous voices shine. You can find more information at minnesotanativenews.org. Good afternoon. I am Jennifer Barr. It's time now for KAXE Rewind, a look back at some of the stories you may have missed this week. We're going to visit Roots and Wings Nature School and hear their phonology report. We'll also hear what we're reading, Tammy Bobrowski's conversation with actress Lily Taylor, and Soccer Talk with Chris Walker and Dan Gannon. Coming up at 2 o'clock, Shiro's Radio, and at 3 o'clock, it's Minnesota Mixtape here on KAXE. Let's start with this week's What We're Reading. Actor Lily Taylor's rediscovery of birds helped her to be more present and engaged with the world. She shares her experiences in her new book, Turning to Birds, The Power and Beauty of Noticing.
During a much-needed break from her work as an actor, Lily Taylor sought peace and quiet. And in that quiet, she rediscovered birds. Now an avid birder, Lily wanted to share how birding has helped her listen, practice mindfulness, and be present and engaged with the world. And she shares this in her new book, Turning to Birds, The Power and Beauty of Noticing. Here's our What We're Reading conversation with Lily Taylor. In the introduction of Turning to Birds, you note that there are similarities between acting and birding, and I wonder if you can tell us about those connections.
Yeah, the main similarity is the skill of listening, which is, for me, I mean, crucial to acting. And I found that it's crucial to not just when I'm observing birds, but really everything. You know, there's this neurologist who said, hearing is a sense and listening is a skill, and the difference between the two is paying attention. And I love that.
Mm-hmm. So we have to know what inspired you to put your birding passions and those observations into a book, into this book.
As time went on and as birds became more important to me, and I found that I was making, sometimes I would put my observations onto, actually I was using that app Day One, and I saw that, oh, I would reflect back, and then I thought, I started to feel the need to share, because I started to see that whenever I mentioned birds, people would light up in some way, even if they didn't have, it was usually a story with like an aunt or someone in, you know, or think they'd heard something about. And I started to think that there was maybe people who would want to hear some of my observations. Mm-hmm. Then I started to feel that it wouldn't be honest for me not to share it to me.
So along with that, a lot of the chapters are based on a specific bird. For example, you have a chapter on called swifts, you have a chapter called finches, catbirds, etc. And then each chapter, you know, has some kind of essay, whether it's about the bird or your experience with it, or maybe even something that's going on in your life. So that was really interesting to see that mix of the three. How did you decide which birds were going to be the focus in the chapters?
Well, it's almost like, I wonder if it's some other way around, but I don't know what way around, because it's almost like what bird needs to be a chapter. Mm-hmm. Right. You know, and it's sort of like, it was about like what had the most energy for me. And you know, one of my editor Libby said to me at the very beginning, I said, is there anything you can give me as I go out from here? And she said, think about what you're gifting the reader. And you know, if a bird wasn't kind of, if the essay wasn't doing it, then that just had to go and went into an archive or something. And so the birds that were in there felt, it seemed that they had something to say.
For sure. Yeah, they do. One of the essays is dedicated to the cedar waxwing, which I loved seeing this in there because they're such a cool bird. I love how you describe them as, quote, a bird that is so perfect, it doesn't seem real, end quote. Because that is so accurate. They look so unreal with this, their mask and the color and the shape. Can you tell us about the first time you saw a cedar waxwing?
Well, up close, the first time was on the ankle of a woman, and it was a tattoo of a cedar waxwing. That was the first time I saw one up close. And that was a tattoo contest at the biggest Week in American Birding Festival. And then I started to get to know cedar waxwing in my yard upstate New York. They have a very high-pitched call. It's it almost sounds like a high whistle or almost a wire sizzling, or I don't know how to describe it. It's hard to describe birdsong. But anyways, you can listen to this. You can find the sound. Just search Google cedar waxwing sound and keep your ears open to that sound, because they're around more than I realized they were. Mm. But they kind of flit around a lot. They seem a little restless, so and they're hard to follow. So but I followed them and I figured it out.
Yeah, they are super hard to photograph, because when I started reading this chapter and you had mentioned that, and I decided to go back through my phone to see the photos that I had taken of them, and they're all just slightly blurry because they don't, they never stay still. So I get that. Yeah. This is what we're reading, and we're talking with actress Lily Taylor, who has just written a book, Turning to Birds, The Power and Beauty of Noticing. So, Lily,
something you said in Turning to Birds really resonated with me. I am a backyard birder, so I'll be out in my yard staring at the sky and the trees, sometimes with my binoculars, sometimes taking photos with my long lens. And every once in a while, I stop and think, my neighbors must think I'm so weird because I'm out pointing my camera right at their house sometimes. You mentioned in your book there are times when you were pursuing a bird and people are kind of staring at you like, what is that woman doing? Do you have advice for finding that balance between, you know, wanting to learn more about birds, wanting to follow them, look at their habitats, versus having to do so in these public spaces where people are around and looking at you kind of funny?
Yeah, good question. And I've wrestled a lot with it. And what I've kind of come to realize is that whenever the conversation happens, you know, when it goes past the odd look and becomes, what are you looking at? That a door opens. And it's an opportunity not only to connect with a person, but to also share a moment together. Because usually I have found that person is interested in what I'm looking at. Even if it might dissipate faster, like maybe they might not stick around for the show, right, like that's about to begin or whatever. Like in the case I'm talking about, the Swifts going into the chimney, the woman left before, but she was curious enough to know what I was looking at. And it's one of those moments that you have at the end of the day, like that you shared with another human being. And you got the news out that there's this thing with wings that's interesting.
I love how you incorporate into these essays your work location as an actor. You're frequently on filming locations, so you get to travel all over the country, and birding seems to tie in really well with this. You're showing in this book that as long as you have a good bird ID app on your phone, a good pair of binoculars, and maybe a little bit of time on your hands, you can turn just about any excursion into a bird watching one. Does that sound right?
Yeah. And so for me, it's sort of any excursion into something with meaning, I think, because that's what the birds help me find meaning. And that's also what I'm finding life is about, is meaning, you know. And what birds do is they open that door to anywhere that I am, because they are a portal. They're a portal for me. And like, for instance, I just learned about an elm tree the other day in a park near my house in Brooklyn that I've passed and haven't really noticed. But because of the bird action in the tree, I started to go deeper into the, what is that tree? And all of a sudden now that park has more meaning for me, because I know more about that place.
So talking with you about your book is really, really good timing. Our station does a question of the week. And last week, the question was, what is your favorite bird? So Lily, do you have a favorite bird, or what are some birds that you really just want to see in person yet?
I would like to see an albatross.
Ooh.
Yeah. And I haven't. And I would like to. Seabirds fascinate me. But the first one that comes to my mind, like in my life, is a pileated, and I have no idea why.
Pileated woodpecker.
Yeah, a pileated woodpecker.
We have a lot of those here.
You do?
Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic. And I have no idea why. I think they're just so, they really do remind me of dinosaurs.
Yeah.
You know, they really do. And I just get excited when I hear a pileated.
Yeah, of all the birds that we have up here, those are the ones that most resemble, I think, a flying dinosaur, just in the way, one of the flying ones, just in the way that they move. It's really very interesting to watch. So what do you recommend for someone who is just getting interested in birds like you went through? Do you have some advice?
Keep it simple. It's just maybe start with a feeder, just see what's going on in your neighborhood and get to know your neighbors, you know, your bird neighbors. And I mean, Sibley, David Sibley, he has one of the best bird guides. He also talks about bird behavior. So he's a good one to go to help understand, oh, why that bird moves like that and the other bird moves like this. And then the Merlin ID app, and just to, again, see what is around you. And of course, Cornell is a great resource. Mm-hmm. Audubon is a great resource. Mm-hmm. eBird. And so start, but just keep it simple and just be open, and you don't have to know all of it today.
Lily Taylor's new book is Turning to Birds, The Power and Beauty of Noticing. This is a lovely book where you'll discover a lot of meaning in small moments. It's What We're Reading. I'm Tammy Bobrowski.
This is KAXE Rewind. I'm Jennifer Barr. We're looking back at a few of the stories you may have missed this week. Up next, we're going to hear from the students at Roots and Wings Forest School in New York Mills, as well as the response from our phonology coordinator, Charlie Mitchell.
This is Otto.
This is Theodore.
This is Rose.
This is Hank.
This is Solomon.
This is Troy reporting from Roots and Wings Forest School. The water was very warm. I stepped in this really dark brown spot in the water, and my foot sunk like almost to the bottom. I really liked to go cannonballing.
We saw two frogs today, and I caught one under the bridge at Wax Cove, the wooden bridge. We put them back in the water.
And what did they do?
They swam away. I was trying to catch the one I caught.
I heard weird birds that sound like chickens in the forest.
The water was getting really warm. The air was 90 degrees. It was really windy.
Outside in our classroom, we found a gardener snake. His belly was really big because there was something in his belly he ate. And it was really fast, and it bit Hank. We saw some early blue violets.
I picked up a lot of rocks.
Thanks for listening! Stay wild!
Stay wild. Thank you, Otto, Theodore, Rose, Hank, Soren, Trent, all the kids at Roots and Wings Forest School. Man, I wish I could air the entire cut of, you know, the full report, with mistakes included, of Roots and Wings Forest School, because it is some glorious chaos. Those kids are having such a great time. I love their note that outside in our classroom. That is such a wonderful phrase for me. They do have an outdoor classroom. They spend a lot of their time outside. And I can give you a sneak peek into the full report. There was some controversy over whether Hank actually got bit by the garter snake.
Thanks for that report. Only Hank knows for sure if he got bit by the snake. Coming up next on KAXE Rewind, yesterday morning we got to talk soccer with Chris Walker and Dan Gannon.
Great, Chris. So the world's most famous soccer player came to Minnesota, and of course nobody in our actual sports page is saying one word about it, so I'm just going to let you fly. You were there. Lionel Messi came to Minnesota, probably the greatest player to ever play the game of soccer. Can be a little debatable, but for me, I would, at least in our lifetime, certainly Lionel Messi's the best ever. What was it like, Chris?
Well, first off, you misspoke because you said the world's most famous soccer player. The world's most famous athlete was in Minnesota.
Yes.
Are you? Yeah. Would you agree? Yeah. No, I think he has. I think he
worldwide for sure.
Something
for sure.
10, 15 million, something like that, Instagram followers. No, I don't think there's any question he's the world's most famous athlete because, yeah, soccer is the world's game. So I know. I love that they mentioned we had to lead with the biggest story in town, and it was, you know, the Twins. Even that, I thought, you know, Timberwolves give him a little bit more credit than the Twins. But, yeah, last weekend, it was a big sports day. You had Inter Miami coming to play Minnesota United. You had the Wolves playing. You had the Twins playing. It was just a cool day to be in the cities. There was just so much buzz around town. But specifically at Allianz Field, it was an atmosphere that I had never experienced before. And we've had season tickets, my brother and I, since the Loons announced they'd be going to Major League Soccer. We joined when they were still in the NASL playing at the National Sports Center in Blaine. So to be at, you know, even comparing this to when Allianz Field opened the first game, to when the MLS All-Star game was there, this was just on another level. They had pregame festivities starting at noon, I think, and the game started at 3:30. And we got down there very early, and there was already cars lined up, parking spots taken that would normally not be filled 3 hours before a game. But it was kind of a spectacle for Minnesota soccer, and I think a big moment in our area. So many fans just around the stadium that didn't even have tickets to the game just to try to get a glimpse of, again, the world's most famous athlete and arguably the greatest soccer player to ever take the pitch. So
that's crazy. So it's like beyond movie star, beyond, you know, whatever the most famous person on the planet you can think of. And he's right there.
Yeah, and it was cool because my daughter and I had a conversation. I had the same conversation with another family we talked to who drove down from Grand Rapids that morning and drove back that night. Another kid in our youth program just said, like, you guys get to see Lionel Messi play in person. And there are millions of kids around the world who dream of watching him play. So to just have him here in Minnesota, you know, when they announced this, there was obviously a lot of buzz, but he hasn't played in every road game, you know, that's been on Miami's schedule. He didn't travel to Vancouver famously last year because it was like a 5,000-mile flight from Miami to Vancouver. Tend to play on turf. There was a game in Houston earlier this year that he did not travel to because he had a little bit of an injury, and I know local fans there were upset because they paid hundreds for tickets. But timing worked out. The weather was beautiful. It was another almost kind of, as someone who grew up in the Twin Cities, loving soccer and playing soccer, never in my wildest dreams could I have imagined it getting to this level in Minnesota.
It's wild. You mentioned Blaine, and I spent many, many, many years before the Loons became the Loons supporting the sort of earlier incarnation of the Loons out in Blaine. And so I feel you, like, moving from that situation out in Blaine, which was amazing in its own very small way, you know, like independent supporters and just a lot of passion there kind of laid the foundation for them to move to MLS, become the Loons, build a stadium, Allianz Stadium, which is a gorgeous stadium. And now, voila, Lionel Messi and Inter Miami, who's, you know, a star-powered team, not only by the players in the field, but David Beckham is one of the owners, mm-hmm. the kind of the primary owner, I believe. So it's crazy.
Yeah, and on top of all that, the game started, and the actual game itself was one of the most entertaining Loons games that I've been to, because Minnesota United have played their style can be frustrating to watch this year because they just let the other team have the ball. I think they have the league's lowest possession rate by far, but what they do so well is counterattack and set pieces, and so they scored two goals in the first half and were up 2-0 at half, but they had, I think, 32 or 33% of possession. Miami just held onto the ball and could not penetrate the Loons defense. And then it was a game you couldn't script better because the Loons really, really dominated in the sense that they played such great defense, capitalized when they need to. They really did shut down Messi. I think, unfortunately for Messi fans, you didn't see his greatest game, but it was also great to see the Wonderwall, the supporter section, go crazy every time that Will Trapp or another player would stuff him. And then the Loons won 4-1, but the lone goal scorer.
Them.
They really
smashed
did.
Them.
The Loons won 4-1, and the lone goal scorer for Miami was a Messi goal that really was an impressive goal. Not a highlight reel goal by any means, but he's just so quick with his feet that he got the ball, he had the tiniest bit of space, and was able to get the left foot on it and score.
Yeah, one touch, he turned and then mm-hmm. drilled it into the far post, low into the ground. It was, in a lot of ways, just like vintage, run-of-the-mill, messy goal, you know, but brilliant. He makes it look so easy, and for all of us mortals, it's impossible to pull something like that off. And if I, at the risk of getting into the weeds, but for our listeners here, you talked about Minnesota's defensive style, and mm-hmm. right now, defensively in professional soccer, playing three defenders in the back is all the rage, right? Just all across, team after team after team is playing three in the back. Minnesota United play five defenders in the back, and then three midfielders and two forwards, I think, 5-3-2, right?
That's what they've done for most of the season, and they had a stretch where they, I think, lost a couple games, so they went three games without a win. Granted, two of them were a draw, and Eric Ramsey, their coach, did switch it up. He played a 3-4-3 against, I can't recall who, but I remember thinking that was an interesting formation to go with. They got back on the winning track. I think that was against Austin, and they won 3-0 on the road. And I actually don't recall what formation they started with against Miami, but I think they had at least four at the back. They did make a trade for Julian Gressel, who's played on the U.S. national team a few times. So I know that that's changed up a little bit because they moved another one of their defenders forward. But yeah, regardless, with what either formation, they are okay letting other teams hang on to the ball because they can then kind of kill you with long throw-ins, counterattacks up to one of their forwards, and it's worked. They're sitting third in the West, I believe. They lost on Wednesday night, but I think
they're on 22 points. Yep. They're 5 points off Vancouver, the leader. And it is. I think it's true. It's an interesting style that you don't see very much, where teams will just sit back and defend. So, like Chris was saying, a majority of the game, the other team, the opposing team, doesn't matter who they are. They didn't do it just because of Messi. Will have the ball and be passing the ball around, mm-hmm. pass, and they pack it in so tightly and defend so well. Like, they've clearly bought into the coach's ideas here, and then. Yeah, their counterattack is lightning fast. And for them to be third in the league, for me, they're the sleeper team of the season across sure. the whole league, MLS. I think nobody expected them. They don't have a star player. Mm-hmm. They have a lot of guys that are very good and a lot of guys that'll just grind, you know?
Yeah, I think it's like a boxing analogy. When you just let the other team throw as many punches as they can, you wear them out, and then you just come back with one or two uppercuts or haymakers, and there you go.
All right.
I'll be down to see them this Saturday against St. Louis.
Yeah,
I'm down there for a youth soccer tournament, and I'm looking forward to seeing the Loons play against St. Louis.
We got two texts in. Steve from the Como area of St. Paul said that the Loons were the first team to beat Miami by more than two goals.
Mm-hmm. Amazing.
Here. Yeah, I think it was only Miami's second loss of the season.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then Eric says, I live by Allianz, and it was fun to see all the excitement last weekend. Unfortunately, did not attend the game, but still just to be in the neighborhood sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, they had a big watch party outside the stadium for anyone who just wanted to be part of the day. Like, there's a huge grass area called the layover lawn. And they had a big screen. They had Soul Asylum playing a free concert before the game.
Oh my gosh.
There was Target, you know, Target's a huge sponsor of the team, had a bunch of different games and activities for kids. There's a new inclusive playground, fantastic playground that our kids love to go to. There's a lot to do around the stadium, and they're continuing to develop that area, that midway area of St. Paul. So they really made sure that any soccer fans who wanted to just be part of it, and again, try to get a glimpse of the Miami bus. I don't think Messi stepped off in an area where people could see him, but just be part of the day's festivities. Anyone could be included. And I think one more note I want to make is, you know, I think for just casual people listening, people not as, you know, maybe just always hearing growing up like, oh, soccer's the world's most famous sport, and hearing it's going to be popular one of these days. I do think it's events like this that really help the game grow, because I think it starts with the youth and the kids who, when I grew up, I loved soccer. I didn't really wear soccer jerseys to school. I don't remember seeing any other kids wear soccer jerseys to school. I drop off my kids at elementary school. I see so many kids wearing Messi jerseys, Ronaldo jerseys, Manchester City jerseys, and some random jerseys I'd never expect
Ooh.
Kids to see. But I think when kids do see this and then they go out and they join their local soccer club, which I know Grand Rapids, our local soccer club, I think we've now almost equaled the amount of kids that are in hockey as one of the largest local youth sports clubs. I think that's what really helps the game grow is bringing kids out to see events like this. And you obviously have the World Cup coming to North America next year. And that should help as well. But it's not like you have a big event, you turn on a TV, and somebody instantly becomes a soccer fan. I think it's just a long, gradual process for this next generation to help the game grow. And I think last Saturday did that, you know, for a lot of
Olympic
kids.
Summation, St. Paul was starstruck. Messi scored a nice Messi goal, and more importantly, the Loons gave them a spanking that they did not enjoy. 4-1 victory. We only got a few minutes, Chris. Let's move on to the U.S. Women's National Team, eh?
Yes.
So they're playing in St. Paul at Allianz Field at the Loon Stadium, May 31st against China. A bunch of kids, you spoke of youth soccer. I coach youth soccer in Bemidji, and a bunch of kids from my team are going to be at that game. And I think China's ranked like in the top 20 in the world. They used to be a power when the U.S. Women's National Team, or when the U.S., or what, sorry, when the Women's World Cup was in the U.S. in 98. That was the U.S. Women's National Team of Mia Hamm and Julie Foudy and all them. China was one of the top three teams in the world. So now they've kind of fallen down quite a bit, down to 17. But they'll be playing the U.S. Women's National Team, who I think have two losses this year, which, I don't know, is that concerning to you?
You know, I think after Emma Hayes' hot start, I think everyone was going to expect a little bit of a regression. I know Sophia Smith, I think she's out, or Sophia Wilson. No, sorry. I think it's out for the year.
Yeah, she's having a baby now. She's pregnant.
That's right. So. But, you know, the pipeline to the U.S. Women's National Team is still so strong that I think it still gives other you know, players an opportunity to shine. And being that there's so many friendlies this year, I'm not concerned as much. I would love to see a player like Maddie Dahleen, local player from Edina, who's playing with Seattle's NWSL team, the Rain. I would love to see her playing a game like this, coming back home. I think she scored her first career club goal the other day. I'm not as concerned, and I think they have five friendlies coming up this through the month of June, starting in July and ending with Canada out in DC at July 2nd. So. No, not as concerned, but I'm excited for the game too. I don't know if I know we are sending a bunch of our club's players as well. Grand Rapids is sending a charter bus. So I would love to make it down, but I don't know if we'll make it for that one.
If anyone's listening that's going to the game, for me, watch Lily Johannes, a midfielder.
Yes.
I think she's only 17.
Yeah, she was born in Netherlands,
sort of like,
right?
For me, she's sort of like the women's version of Lamine Yamal, the Barcelona player who's also 17 and is lighting the world on fire right now, potentially the next Messi without, I don't want to jinx him, but Lily Johannes is a special, special player. She looks like she's almost playing in slow motion or half speed, and that's just because of her control of the ball and her vision of the game is so unbelievable. Like, watch this player, Lily Johannes. Here in the cities, May 31st, go see the U.S. Women's National Team versus China. Not only are they awesome role models for girls and young women, but also for the boys as well. They're just incredible players, incredible athletes, and their coach, Emma Hayes, is a pretty interesting character, I would say, and is doing a lot of interesting things with the team. And it's just, like Chris said, it won't maybe be on the Messi star level, but there'll be a buzz in that stadium for the U.S. Women's National Team for sure.
And one more quick shout out to Minnesota Aurora, local Minnesota women's semi-professional team, starting their season May 22nd. If we have any listeners in the cities, or if you're traveling down to the cities and want to catch some really great soccer at a really much cheaper rate than what U.S. soccer charges, head to Egan, and they play at the Vikings training facility out there, TCO Stadium. I know we're also sending the club down, a bunch of girls down for a game, so we're looking forward to that.
Nice.
Great. Well, that's Chris Walker and Dan Gannon. It's been Soccer Talk. Thanks so much, you guys. It's been fun.
Thanks, Jennifer.
Thank you.
That's it for KAXE Rewind this week. We hope to see you on Thursday at the Kick It with KAXE event. It's a free outdoor concert featuring Molly Mayer and Woodblind meets Tig Alexi at Rapids Brewing Company. It's also KAXE's annual meeting starting at 5:30. We'll have a brief recap of the past year. Plus, we'll give out some volunteer awards between the bands. It's made possible by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Again, this Thursday at Rapids Brewing Co. Kick It with KAXE. Until next time, I'm Jennifer Barr.
Tornadoes, fires, blizzards. We don't like to think about it, but when severe weather hits, how will you stay informed? Hi, I'm Steve Noy, IT and broadcast engineer for KAXE. As an IT professional, it's hard to admit, but in the event of inclement weather, I can't totally count on my phone or internet. As our nation recently realized during the aftermath of Hurricane Sandy or the wildfires in California, weather and power outages can take out essential equipment, creating a dangerous bottleneck as multitudes of requests were routed through backup systems. That's where local radio comes in. Even if every station but one was disabled and every radio within a 50-mile radius was tuned to it, there would be no gridlock, no delays. It doesn't matter how many people are using it. This makes radio a valuable asset, even if the worst should happen, and it's one of the many benefits offered by KAXE. That's why we're looking for your help. Become a member. Text us at 218-326-1234. Be a part of KAXE, people-powered radio.
What it takes to be free, I don't mind. Still moving me. Still moving me. It's hard to explain how I feel. It won't go in words, but I know that it's real. I can be moving, or I can be still. But still moving me.
This is 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and on your smart speaker, we are People Powered Radio in northern Minnesota. Join us at KAXE.org. And Lake Bemidji State Park has reopened with limited access. The campground, beach, and Rocky Point Trail are open. All other trails remain closed until further notice. Now it's time for Weekend.